She was a prolific singer. She had an enormous long 6-decade career. And over those 6 decades, she said that she sang thousands and thousands of songs.
You're gonna miss me, honey, when I'm far away.
And because she was coming up when jazz was being made, she was also one of the major contributors to the formation of vocal jazz.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Serbia's largest pride march fills Belgrade streets, gay Zimbabweans' bad breakup leads to sodomy busts, and Ms. Tucker sees all, tells all, sings all. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 14th, 2024. The largest LGBTQ pride march in Serbia's history had several thousand people marching through the capital of Belgrade on September 7th. They were not deterred by threats of violence from right-wing extremists or the recent attack on a young gay man for carrying a rainbow flag. Banners urged marchers to love and be brave. The procession was protected by a heavy police presence. Government protection from such verbal and physical violence has been a key pride demand for years. Blatant discrimination routinely plagues sexual and gender minorities in the socially conservative Balkan nation. Despite record pride march turnouts both last year and this, demands for the legal recognition of same-gender couples and laws protecting the rights of transgender people have gone ignored. It's a major reason why Serbia's bid to join the European Union has stalled. Several ambassadors from Western countries led contingents in the march. Of course, there was plenty of dance music blasting from large trucks and lots of chanting and waving rainbow flags. Politicians from opposition political parties and a few of the Serbian government's more progressive members joined in. More banners proclaimed, "No one is free until everyone is free. Love wins, and homophobia is so boring." A small, boring group in the center of the city protested the Pride March behind a banner reading, "Parade Humiliation." They also carried Serbian Orthodox Church symbols and Serbian flags. Dozens of Russians fleeing the oppressive regime of Vladimir Putin and his war on Ukraine found a home in Belgrade's Pride March. A concert and after-party followed the march.
A gay male couple in Zimbabwe is sorry about getting the police involved during their messy breakup. Now each faces up to a year in prison for sodomy. Prosecutors say that Tavimbanashe Shawatama and Leonard Nyakadaya moved in together last year, but had a falling out in August over issues of infidelity. As Nyakadaya was moving out, Shawatama accused him of stealing money. They went to the Harare police station over the alleged theft, but their cell phones revealed recordings of them having sex. That's a violation of Section 73I of the country's penal code, a remnant of British colonial era rule. It outlaws what it calls any act involving physical contact that would be regarded by a reasonable person to be an indecent act. Those convicted of sodomy are liable for a fine and/or imprisonment for a year. LGBTQ advocacy groups note that the police ignored the issue of the missing money that had prompted Chawatama and Nyakadaya to seek their help in the first place. They've each been released on the equivalent of $50 bail.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics will include questions about sexual orientation and gender identity in its 2026 census. The ruling Labour Party had made a campaign promise to conduct an inclusive census. However, officials had apparently ended up omitting any LGBTQ questions in a misplaced desire to avoid a culture war controversy. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese responded to the widespread criticism from queer rights groups and his own Labour Party last week, saying that questions about sexual orientation had been added. The absence of questions about gender identity prompted renewed criticism. That issue was addressed, and Treasurer Jim Chalmers updated Australian Bureau of Statistics policy again late this week during an interview on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
The message that we want to ensure that Australians hear from us today is that we understand the feedback that we got. We listened to that. We took it very seriously. We listened very genuinely. We said that we would find the best way to do this, and I believe that we have and we will, and the ABS will continue to refine the actual wording of the questions now that this additional topic has been added.
There's still another painful omission, one that Intersex Human Rights Australia CEO, Dr. Morgan Carpenter, finds devastating. In his words, it means we won't get much needed information on the health and well-being of people with innate variations of sex characteristics.
Australia is making more gender identity news this week with an independent study commissioned by the state of New South Wales. The report concluded that the benefits of puberty blockers and other reversible treatments for transgender young people far outweigh any potential drawbacks. That flies in the face of the UK's controversial CAS report, which reached the opposite conclusion. Under Britain's Tory government, the CAS report was used to temporarily ban pediatric gender-affirming treatment in England, Scotland, and Wales. The incoming Labour Party government has signaled that it will make those restrictions permanent. The Sachs Institute is an independent nonprofit that advocates for evidence-based healthcare solutions. It studied 82 papers on gender-affirming healthcare, including 17 focusing on puberty blockers that found them to be safe, effective, and reversible. The report found that earlier studies in Australia had been poorly conducted for several different reasons. It concluded that the papers in their study reported positive results across the domains of body image, gender dysphoria, depression, anxiety, suicide risk, quality of life, and cognitive function. According to the Sachs Institute, neutral and some negative findings were also reported in these domains, and that two studies reported no changes in mental health care use following gender-affirming pharmaceutical care. The Institute said that further research is still an absolute must.
Finally, chalk up a couple more points for conspiracy-pushing social media troll Robbie Starbuck and his right-wing minions. Two more U.S.-based corporations are bowing to their pressure to abandon policies encouraging diversity, equity, and inclusion in their respective workplaces. This time, it's Molson Coors Brewing Company and toolmaking Stanley Black & Decker. Starbuck's campaigns to expose what he calls companies' unsavory woke policies has thus far brought down the DEI programs of Tractor Supply, John Deere, Jack Daniels, Harley Davidson, Lowe's Home Improvement, and the Ford Motor Company. In the long run, companies may find that running away from diversity means running away from customers. The Human Rights Campaign Foundation's 2024 LGBTQ plus climate survey revealed that 80% of LGBTQ plus U.S. adults would boycott a company that rolled back its inclusive workplace policies. More than half said that they would use social media to encourage others to join a boycott. Are workplace DEI policies really vanishing? Not according to the Human Rights Campaign's upcoming Corporate Equality Index, to be published in early 2025. The queer advocacy group annually measures how a company's policies and practices benefit LGBTQ workers. HRC President Kelly Robinson announced record participation in their index survey this week. She told CNBC Squawk Box host Andrew Ross Sorkin that she sees no reason to panic about the highly publicized retreats away from DEI policy.
You know, I think that we're not telling the whole story here. Sure, there are a handful of companies that are making these poor, short-sighted decisions. So while you may see Ford backing away, you have every other major auto manufacturer in this country that's participating in the CEI. This is, bottom line, the best thing to do for businesses. And that's why I think that we're seeing so much energy from employees, from consumers, and from shareholders starting to push back on these decisions that these companies have made.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending September 14th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, with thanks this week to Barry McKay. Produced by Brian DeShazer and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
Kamala supports states being able to take minor children and perform sex change operation, take them away from their parents, perform sex change operation, and send them back home. Can you imagine you're a parent and your son leaves the house and you say, Jimmy, I love you so much. Go have a good day in school. And your son comes back with a brutal operation.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
The bold, brash, and body life and artistry of Sophie Tucker has been fascinating queer people for generations, and This Way Out's Brian DeShazer is no exception. So he was eager to chat with the woman who's bringing back the last of the Red Hot Mamas.
Hi, Laurel Mead.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to This Way Out.
Thank you.
We're here talking with Laurel Mead, playwright, performer, and writer of...
Ms. Tucker Will See You Now.
Thank you. A show that is now playing at the LGBT Center here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And we're here to talk about why Sophie Tucker and why the queer community should care about Sophie Tucker.
Well, I'll tell you, the best place to start is with her music. She was a prolific singer. She had an enormous long 6-decade career. And over those 6 decades, she said that she sang thousands and thousands of songs. And the word on her was that at the drop of a hat, she knew hundreds of songs by heart and could sing any for you. And she came up starting in 1906, when, of course, you know, no one had the radio. There was not something to go to. So if you wanted to know what the popular music was, you got sheet music, right? That's how people traded popular music. And she was one of those people that started knocking on the doors of Tin Pan Alley composers. And introduced herself as a singer, like, what do you got? What's hot? And she was really about always doing new music for every performance and staying on top of what was popular. And so she was one of the people that really spread and disseminated new music. And because she was coming up when jazz was being made, she was also one of the major contributors to the formation of vocal jazz, as she was responding primarily to Black musicians at the time.
Dad.
She ran off to New York City from Hartford, Connecticut when she was 20 years old to go make it big in vaudeville. And she left behind a husband and a child and struck out on her own, which was absolutely unheard of. And a lot of people, the pundits who write about her, the wonderful experts who write about her, point out that she really created a man's career for herself because there were no female models for what she wanted to do, right? The kind of music she wanted to sing, the way she wanted to sing it, and to sing it independently, and not part of, not as part of an act or, you know, not with any kind of real innocence about it. At the end of the day, she came out swinging with blue music almost immediately.
What is it? What is blue music?
Nasty, sexy, dirty, adult, raunchy, randy, risque.
Vegas,
right? Naughty, naughty material. And, you know, we listen to it now, decades later, a century later, and it doesn't seem that risque. But when you think that, oh, wait, she was singing that song in 1910, it's really adult what she was getting into.
Now, what is one of your favorite songs from that early era?
I sing one in my show that she was singing. It was considered the song that put her on the map. It was called My Husband's in the City. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah is the title of the song. And actually, it wasn't written for her, but she popularized it. And the song was written in response to an Irving Berlin song that was popular at the time called My Wife's Gone to the Country, Hurrah, Hurrah, Hurrah. And so the idea is it's summer and you go out, you know, the wife takes the children off to the country to go vacation for the summer, and the man is left alone in the city where he can get it on with anybody he wants to because he's free and on his own. And so someone got the smart idea to flip the switch on this and to sing about a woman who has gone off to the country and is having fun on her own in the country while her husband is in the city. And so she popularized that song, and it was really the song that got her big notoriety on burlesque and vaudeville houses.
We go away to mountains or seashore. I can't take hubby with me. Poor boy, he must stay home, mind the store. You bet he's having one great time, although he writes to me, I'm feeling blue. He hasn't got a thing on me. I have a good time too. Oh, my husband's in the city, about 100 miles away. He thinks for him I'm pining, fading away. And so he comes out every Friday. For what? I do not know, but he only stays till Sunday. Hooray, hurrah, hurrah. When hubby says bye-bye, another chap says howdy-do. So I am never weary, for we have such fun, we two. By moonlight, we go boating, and he motors without fear. I wouldn't care if my old man would stay home for a year. Oh, my.
You know, it's really stunning when you look at the information about her, about what a risk taker she was and what a boundary breaker she was, and how she wanted to really bust open the idea of a woman has to be pure, a woman has to be for the home, a woman has to be domestic, right? A woman has to be subservient. Really, like at the time, what was called the cult of true womanhood or the...
Right, this is like during the Gilded Age, when it's basically Victorian era
morals
and etiquette.
her teachers would tell her she had personality all the time, and she had to ask her mom, what does personality mean? And it was like, well, it's you. She had charisma and energy and joy. She was also big from an early age, to use her word, fat, as a little kid, and not conventionally beautiful. I mean, I think a very beautiful person, but not conventionally beautiful. And so she had a lot going against her, and she wanted out, and she wanted to make her own way for herself, to have independence from that restaurant, from the orthodoxy, from her family, and then from her husband and her child. And so she busted out on her own in ways that you just didn't do in 1906 when you were 20 years old.
Well, and I think that hits the mark in terms of how do queers relate, or how does Sophie Tucker relate to us, mm-hmm. and the outsider, and yeah. wanting to escape.
Yep, right. That was absolutely it. It was really stunning how brave she was and how driven she was to do it. And apparently immediately likable, a warm person, a friendly person, a lover of people. And so she put herself in places where she could bring her gifts to people and be her own self-directed person.
Cause I'm the last of the red hot moms. They've all cooled down but me. Flap of vamps, say what do they know? Come get your hot stuff from this volcano. I'm an overheated, try and beat it. Hotsy totsy hot and tot. Now it may be snowing, but when I get going, oh baby, it's hot. You can leave your collegiate charmers. Their loving isn't worth a dime. Way up in Alaska where the locals freeze, a fella left my igloo in his BVDs. Cause I'm the last of the red hot mamas. I'm getting hotter all the time. Now I don't want to brag, but in my hotel suite, a dozen firemen were overcome by heat. A miner wants
what
to
was the allyship between her and minority communities and maybe even queer communities?
It's interesting because one of the major last chapters of Sophie's life, she was married three times. She had three failed marriages to men. And the research all shows that after her last marriage ended, she only kept the company of women. And she really spent all of her time, social and otherwise, with women, really, and even left the company of male friends that she had had for long periods of time. And during this time, she made a major strong friendship with a woman named Margaret Chung, who was a Chinese-American doctor who practiced Western medicine, was actually a military woman. And Margaret Chung lived in San Francisco and kept an open house for military men who needed a place to stay, and women as well. And so whenever Sophie toured through San Francisco, she would go stay at Dr. Chung's house. And they would go out and party together. They dressed alike. They sat next to each other. They were very chummy with each other. And taking a look at the evidence, it seems that Dr. Chung was deeply in love with Sophie. But I don't think that Sophie was able to go on the record, perhaps, about whatever feelings that she was having, or perhaps wasn't even in tune enough with her own self to be able to really actualize around it.
Right, or recognize what that relationship really
exactly.
was beyond what she could accept
yep.
from her history.
Yep, that's right. I'm really trying to give you the experience of what it was like to see her in her nightclub milieu without doing an impression of her. Because I'm not an impressionist, and she really was a very particular flavor vocally, and we're very different singers. You know, she sang for 60 years in public daily, and started when they were
young. Miss Tucker died in her boots at the age of 80, and this is the kind of material she was doing toward the end. To the columnists, a rumor somehow still persists that a certain gentleman and I have named the date, which I must deny. He's rich and handsome and gallant. He's everything a gal could want, but I've learned my lesson. And anyhow, I like the way I'm living now. Cause I'm a one-ticket gal, free as the breeze. I go where I like, I do what I please. When I lock up my apartment, I've got all the keys. I'm living alone and I like it. If I want to play gin,
her persona of we're here to have fun, be joyful, to be off the cuff, be loose, to be interactive in a nightclub kind of a way, in a burlesque kind of a way. And really, thus the title of the show, Miss Tucker Will See You Now, to make you feel seen. The reason I called the show that is not only do I want the audience to feel seen, I feel seen by her. So that title is about me as much as it is about an effect I want to have on the audience. Because as soon as I started to look into her, I was struck by her power, her self-agency, her drive, her ambition, her joy, and a real, like, no holds barred. If I want it, I'm going after it. She just became a role model to me immediately, especially as a woman of size coming from a conservative background and a culture that tells us, yeah, do everything that the church tells you to do, right? Shut up, sit down, be nice, be virginal, speak when spoken to. Like, I was raised on that. And she was raised on it too. And she busted out, and it's taken me much longer than her to bust out. But I feel seen by her, constantly inspired by her.
We've been speaking with Laurel Mead, writer and performer of Miss Tucker Will See You Now, playing at the Los Angeles LGBT Center. I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Michael Taylor Gray and Melanie Keller, with thanks to Barry McKay. It was produced by Brian DeShazer, who was also this week's feature correspondent. You heard music by Alice Cooper, Paul Simon, Donna Summer, Leah Delaria, Sophie Tucker, and Laurel Mead. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, KSPC Claremont, California, WCRS Columbus, Ohio, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.